You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three in it.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook,
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. And your Houston Rockets are humming along nicely. 10 games into the season, standing at 7-3, just picked up a win last night over the New Orleans Pelicans in New Orleans, 122-116. Now, out of all these wins, they're 7-3. They haven't come against necessarily good teams. The Rockets have had a fairly easy schedule to start the season. And maybe that's just what this squad needed. You've got Russell Westbrook being integrated into a system with another ball-dominant guard, James Harden. And we saw this take place 2 years ago with Chris Paul. And Chris Paul wasn't even here for the first 20 games. And we've spoken about it before. Chris Paul was better suited to slide into the system as somewhat of a spot-up shooter, more so than Russell Westbrook was. So now you've got Russell Westbrook, James Harden, and they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to get acclimated to each other, to playing with each other again after their days in OKC. And so maybe having the easier schedule to start was a good thing, because right now the schedule is about to get pretty difficult. They've got a bit of a gauntlet coming up, and we'll get more on that later. But back to the game at hand, they both played pretty solid games. They did not shoot the ball well at all from behind the arc, but they found a way to make it work inside the arc, which was huge. They actually, rather than James continuing to jack three-point shots, or rather the team as a whole continuing to fire up these three-point shots that were getting them nowhere, they actually attacked the paint. They got inside. Westbrook was hitting mid-range jumpers as if he was CP3. I said it on Twitter, but I was fully convinced that this was CP3 in a Westbrook mask, because the rate at which he was hitting mid-range jumpers, which I think he was 6 of 8 on the night from mid-range, it was astonishing. And if Westbrook's going to have an occasional game where he can't miss from mid-range, so be it. But if he thinks he's going to do that every game and continue to pile up the misses from there, then somebody's going to have to sit him down and say, hey, we don't do that here. Overall, though, from those two guys, James Harden finished the night 39 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, had a couple steals, had a block. He did have 6 turnovers. Again, I've mentioned it before, we've come to accept that from James and from Russ, that those two guys are going to average, you know, in the realm of probably 4 to 6 turnovers a game. Obviously, we want that to be near the lower end of that spectrum, you know, keep it around 4 a game. And turnovers is something I wanted to touch base on a little bit more later on anyways. Westbrook, 26 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, some lower numbers than we're used to seeing from him. But he did have 4 steals. He also had 6 turnovers. But Westbrook was kind of this consistent force in last night's game. His mid-range jumpers were keeping the Rockets, maybe, I don't want to say keeping them afloat, because they led. There was a push at the end of the first quarter led by Westbrook where the Rockets finished the quarter up 7, and they never trailed after that. Now, there were times where the Pelicans kind of made pushes and looked like they were getting themselves back into the game, but they never had the lead again. And that original push at the end of the first quarter, led by Westbrook, is what kind of gave the Rockets that comfortable lead, and then they just kind of worked it from there. They had a 6-point lead at halftime, and all throughout the game, the moments where Westbrook decided that he would just kind of, offensively, it was consistent. It was nice to see Westbrook kind of space himself out and have a consistent night offensively. He couldn't hit a three ball to save his life. He was 1 of 8 from downtown, but all the threes he took were relatively wide open. And so I'm okay with every single one that he took. Because is he going to shoot 1 of 8 from downtown on wide open looks? No. He's not going to shoot 12% on wide open looks. He'll get it up to about 30, maybe even 35. So on any other given night, if he were to regress to his mean, he'd probably hit 1 or 2 more of those. And then you're looking at a Westbrook that's shooting 3 of 8 from downtown rather than 1 of 8. And you're looking at a final box score that's maybe 128 to 116. It looks more like a sound victory instead of a 6-point scrape by of a lottery New Orleans Pelicans team. But this box score feels a little bit closer than what the game truly felt like. The Rockets weren't really in danger at any point of losing this game. It didn't really feel like. It felt like they pretty much had a firm grasp on the game throughout. And then as James Harden found his way in the third quarter, I want to say it was the third quarter or end of the fourth, where James basically took over, scored 15 points by himself for the Rockets, had 15 Rockets points in a row, and was able to kind of carry them to the win. He did start the game cold, just had 2 points in the first quarter, and he was, again, 3 of 11 from downtown on the night, but 28 of his points came in the second half, and there it is. It was 19 in the fourth quarter. And that was where he had 15 consecutive points for the Rockets. So James Harden showed up when you needed him to. Russell Westbrook was consistent throughout the game. And we had a nice surprise showing from none other than Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon actually decided to come to town and play basketball. And maybe it was sparked by the booze. And we'll get more on that in just a second. Daniel House also regrettably had a really bad fall in the first quarter. He went up for a shot and came crashing down, landed really firmly on his, like, right above his tailbone, kind of his lower back area, and was visibly shaken up as he was laying there on the court. Eventually got up, kind of went back to the other end, and he played a couple more possessions before he got checked out. And then he sat on the bench for longer than usual. A lot of people thought that he wasn't even going to come back in that half, but with about, I want to say, 5, maybe 6 minutes to go in the quarter, he did check back in. And I can't actually remember off the top of my head if he played till the end of the second half. I do remember him checking back in, which I remember being surprised by that. I did not expect him to return after a fall of that magnitude, but he did not play in the second half whatsoever. After the game, Mike D'Antoni did say that he thinks that Daniel House should be okay, but he didn't give any firm, concrete type of timetable on his return, whether or not he would be available for the Rockets' next game here in Houston, which is a 6:30 tip-off against the LA Clippers. And House missing that game, obviously we care about his health. We want him to be healthy. And if he has to miss that game, so be it. But House missing that game against one of the upper tier teams in the league, as the Rockets kind of start this 8-game or so gauntlet where they face a lot of really talented teams, it's going to be rough. And if he misses even more than just one game, it's going to be really tough for them to come out with some wins against these top-tier opponents. Hey guys, really quickly, I wanted to tell you about Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment, including Audible Originals. Audible Originals are stories created exclusively for audio, including documentaries, exclusive audiobooks, and scripted shows that you really can't hear anywhere else. Audible keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. You'll finish more stories when you listen to Audible and always be a part of the conversation. You can listen at the gym, while shopping, in the car, and that's where I choose to listen. I commute quite a bit, I'm a student, and Audible actually has textbooks available. I found a psych textbook that has been helping me with this class that I'm in this semester, and I honestly don't know how I'd be doing it without Audible. Every month, you can choose one audiobook regardless of price, as well as two Audible originals from a fresh selection. You can start listening now with a 30-day Audible free trial. You choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. All you have to do is visit audible.com/lockedonNBA or text LOCKEDONNBA to 500-500. Again, that's audible.com/lockedonNBA, or you can text LOCKEDONNBA to 500-500 to get involved now. All right, and welcome back into Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Eric Gordon had his first good game of the season. It was definitely his most efficient game, and maybe it was sparked by the surprising amount of boos that he was getting in New Orleans. Like, that was actually shocking to me. I was just sitting here at home, minding my business, ready to enjoy my Houston Rockets, and it was like the moment Eric Gordon checked into the game and caught the ball, you just hear these boos coming, and I'm sitting here thinking, what is going on? Like, it's been 3 years. Get over it, New Orleans. Like, whatever gripe they had with Eric Gordon, they've obviously held on to it. Because these were loud boos. These are the type of boos that you would expect, like, Kevin Durant to get upon his visit to OKC after the way that he left. Or maybe LeBron going back to the Heat after leaving for Cleveland. Or LeBron visiting Cleveland after going to the... Like, these were legitimate, like, superstar-type boos that Eric Gordon was getting. And not just the first time he touched the ball. He was getting booed every time he touched the basketball. It was actually wild to me. And it was pretty wild to most of you on Twitter, too. I feel like everybody commented on it. It was a very strange sequence of events. But maybe the boos is what he needed. Because he missed his first two or three shots, and then after that, he didn't really look back. He finished the night on 6 of 11 shooting, 4 of 7 from three-point range, had 17 total points, and again, coupled with the absence of Daniel House from this game, they really needed Eric Gordon to show up, and that's just what he did. He hit some really long-distance bombs. I want to say there were at least two that were like from 30 feet out. So it's a welcome sight to have Eric Gordon back in his role. And the team, yeah, they scraped out a six-point win over the Pelicans. But that box score doesn't really do it justice because at multiple points throughout the game, the Rockets had very comfortable leads. And then New Orleans just getting lucky, maybe not with the whistle, but just nailing some really contested three-point looks. J.J. Redick had a ridiculous night. He went off for 24 points, hit almost half of his threes, 7 of 15. So even though the Pelicans were undermanned, they still put up a decent fight, but the Rockets were coasting for the majority of that second half. They really were. Once James Harden got it rolling, they didn't really look back, and so you've got Eric Gordon, who had a great game. The way the game started, Clint Capella deserves some credit because his energy and hustle just in that first quarter alone really kind of started things. And when you're the big on the team and when you've got a set of guards or set of wings on your perimeter that are not necessarily the best defenders in the league, and you know you've got your work cut out for you as guys are going to be driving to the bucket, Capella was very active. He was soaking in every single rebound. I feel like he finished the first quarter, I think it was 7 points, 8 rebounds off the top of my head. And that was due in large part to all his activity. He was soaking in rebounds left and right. He was contesting shots. He looked much better. And he's looked better in these last few games as opposed to the start of the season where he did say he was struggling with a bit of a shoulder injury. Probably not in great physical shape, maybe not peak conditioning. And for a big that is expected to run the court as much as he is, he ran the court a lot in the previous years, just running alongside Harden, probably one of the fastest bigs in the league. But now, with the Rockets' pace jumping through the roof, the expectation's even higher. The expectation is for Clint to continue to make it up and down the court, and that's a trek for a big guy. The Rockets are still number one in pace after last night, 107.8, just ahead of the Bucks and, surprisingly, the Pelicans. But they still rank number one in pace. As far as offensive rating goes, they've dropped to number three, down to 111.7, and then their defensive rating has continued to improve ever so slightly at 109.7. So now their net rating is sitting comfortably at 2, which is right around middle of the pack. Let me see. That is net rating of 2 puts them at 13th in the league. Now, in previous years, the Rockets have had a much more significant net rating than that. I want to say it was 5 last year, 3 the year before that, and then 1 or something like that. It's those three numbers. I can't remember the order that they were in. But these past three iterations of the Rockets teams have been elite offensively. They've been middle of the pack defensively, with the exception of the 17-18 season where they were actually a top-tier defensive team. And that was probably the year, actually, where they had the net rating of, what was it, 5, something I said like that. Because that was the year where they combined an elite offense with a strong defense. This year, I think our hopes are somewhere more along the lines of an elite offense with a mid-tier defense. Somewhere in that 10 to 15 range, more ideally 10 to 12, and you can consider yourself a contender. If you are far and away the best offense in the league, or one of the top three best offenses in the league, and then you consider yourself a middle-of-the-pack defensive team, you can get by with that. And that's what I think this team is working slowly towards, they're trending towards. As you get more comfortable, as you get guys better conditioned, get their legs under them, you'll see the effort showing up. And that's what's important. Over time, this scheme will prove to work. And as we've seen it in the first 10 games or so, there have been some missed coverages, some blown defensive assignments where you've got Westbrook who thinks a switch is happening and then it doesn't, or you've got Harden who gets caught ball watching, and those things won't necessarily correct themselves over time because those are negative defensive habits that are ingrained. At least the Harden ball watching one is, but Westbrook is a culprit of also not trying his best on defense. There was a couple switches last night where Westbrook I kind of was watching him, and he gets caught ball watching too. It's maybe not nearly as egregious as when Harden does it, but they're both culprits of maybe not taking plays off intentionally on defense, but just not thinking or not putting their best foot forward defensively. But last night it worked. What they did worked. The Pelicans struggled. The Rockets coasted to a win, and Westbrook and Harden looked good. Capella looked good. By the end of the game, he snatched up 20 rebounds. He's the first Rocket since Charles Barkley way back in 96 to have two consecutive 20-plus rebound games back-to-back. So kudos to Capella for staying active on the boards. PJ Tucker had a bit of a rough night from beyond the arc, 1 of 5. He did hit his 3 free throws, and he did finish with 10 points. He had a few buckets here and there, a couple layups, a couple little scoop shots. But PJ Tucker's got to get going again from behind the three-point arc. Now, did we know that, or did we think that 60-something percent three-point shooting that he was sitting at was going to be sustainable? No. But can we have PJ Tucker going 1 of 5 from behind the line? Not at all. He has to keep defenses honest, and he has to stay consistent from behind the arc in his little corner spot. He's got to keep PJ's corner warm and cozy. He's got to be hitting his shots from over there. Daniel House, we can't really look at his stat line. He only played 12 minutes, and the back half of those minutes that he played came with the unsettling back injury or lower back injury that he's going to be dealing with. So we can't really judge his play based on this game. He was 0 of 2, did hit a couple free throws, but apart from that, not much on that angle. The bench and D'Antoni's rotations last night, I think, deserve a little bit of a highlight because he had to deal with no House in the second half. And kudos to Mike D'Antoni, he actually started Ben McLemore in the second half. He kept Eric Gordon on the bench because he wanted to stick true to his rotation of keeping two of James Harden, Westbrook, and Eric Gordon on the court at all times. And it worked. Having Eric Gordon essentially pair up with one of Harden or Westbrook worked. Eric Gordon finished the game strong, our other two guys finished the game strong, and the team overall looked good. And Mike D'Antoni did space out some of his minutes. He didn't let Cephalosha play in the first half, but he did get him six or so minutes in the second half. So it looked like if Daniel House hadn't gotten injured, that Mike D'Antoni probably would have ran a six-man lineup last night. Tyson Chandler was getting some burn because Capella, for all his energy and effort, was maybe not necessarily getting worked over by Favors and by Jahlil Okafor, but those guys, they were bullying in the paint at points throughout the game. And so I can see why he put in Tyson Chandler, let him get about 10 minutes or so. Rivers had 21 minutes and 8 points off the bench, just 1 of 3 from downtown, but 3 of 6 overall. Nice kind of spread out bench scoring. Nobody really stood out apart from Eric Gordon. Cephalosha hit a 3. Chandler had 2 points. Ben McLemore with 4 points, hit 1 3-pointer, had a free throw. So Ben McLemore's performance could have been a little bit better. But all things considered, it was a well-rounded game. You got minutes spread out to all your guys. Really, James Harden was the high-minute man last night at 38. Capella at 36. But I think that maybe those two guys are still kind of playing themselves into shape, I would guess. So if their minutes tend to run hot, let it be. Russell Westbrook, his minutes need to be monitored. He's still recovering from that knee scope. PJ Tucker got 33 minutes, which I'm happy about. PJ doesn't need to be racking up close to 40 minutes a game. He's 34 years old. He'll be 35 before the season's over. PJ Tucker needs less minutes. And I'll just go ahead and say it again. Gary Clark could use those minutes. We're just going to keep that a little secret. Because apparently, Mike D'Antoni is never going to play Gary Clark ever again in his entire life. All right, and we are back here for our final segment right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. And for this last segment, we're just going to go ahead and review this upcoming slate of games for the Rockets and more or less how we think they're going to fare. Now, they've got the LA Clippers here in town with a oddly timed, because of the national TV schedule, 6:30 p.m. tip-off. This Wednesday, Paul George may or may not play this game. And originally, I was all for it. I was all for going up against Paul George, having him here in Houston his first game back. I know you guys might not want to hear that, but I wanted to see what this team was capable of against a full health Clippers squad that is going to be a terror down the line. I like watching good basketball. And I like watching the Rockets rise to the level of their opponent. And I really felt that this home game against the Clippers with Paul George, his first game back, yeah, he would be knocking the rust off a little bit. But I really wanted to see that. And it remains to be seen whether or not we're going to see that. I kind of, at this point, if Daniel House isn't playing, then I'm not going to be super upset if the Clippers aren't at full strength. So I will gladly take it if Paul George does not return to the lineup in this game, based on the question marks surrounding Daniel House and the uncertainty involved in that regard. So with that, you've got the Clippers. They're playing great basketball. They're 7-3 as well. Kawhi Leonard is being Kawhi Leonard. The team looks good. The West Coast Rockets are in full swing. Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley, all returning to town. I'm sure there's going to be sparks there between Beverly and Westbrook. It's going to be a great game. Regardless of if Paul George plays, regardless of if Daniel House is healthy and active, it's going to be a great game. There will be sparks between Westbrook and Patrick Beverly, and not the romantic kind. Maybe I should have chosen a different terminology, but I'm going to stick with it. There will be sparks between those two, and not the romantic kind. So you've got that as the first of a really rough 8-game stretch. Because then, a couple days later, you've got Indiana who comes to town Friday, November 15th. You go out, and this is the only back-to-back during this stretch. But then you go out Saturday, November 16th. You fly up, and you deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Then you come back to town very briefly. You play Portland Monday, November 18th. Then you go back out for a two-game swing. You get Denver Wednesday, November 20th in the Mile High City. Then you go back out to the West Coast, and you play the LA Clippers again Friday, November 22nd. And then you're back home Sunday, November 24th against Dallas, which is an early tip-off at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon on a Sunday. Then you get a bit of a couple days rest, and then you deal with the Miami Heat Wednesday, November 27th, right before Thanksgiving. And then to wrap up the month of November, you have one game against the Atlanta Hawks, November 30th, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. But I'm not counting that in the gauntlet of eight games. So Atlanta is a team that you should beat. They are rebuilding. Yes, they have Trae Young. Yes, they have an exciting young roster. But there is no reason that a team with championship aspirations shouldn't be able to put away a lottery team like the Atlanta Hawks. Every other team in that lineup is a legitimate team. Are they all championship contenders? Probably not. But do most of those teams have playoff aspirations? Certainly. The only team that isn't above 500 are the Trailblazers. And you're not going to sit here and try and tell me, and I'm not going to sit here and try and tell you that the Trailblazers are some laughingstock now because they just don't have a 500 record. The Rockets weren't a laughingstock because they didn't have a 500 record last year. They still had James Harden. They could still beat any team in the association. They were just struggling. And that's kind of what I'm seeing from Portland right now. They still have Damian Lillard, who put up the first 60-point game already of the season. It was in a loss, but he did it. And he can go off on any night. CJ McCollum can go off on any night. They've got guys who you really can't mess around with. So even though they're the only team out of those eight that has a record below 500 right now, you still have to take them very seriously. As far as this stretch of games goes, I would love it if the Rockets could somehow go 6-2 during this stretch. I think 5-3 is a bit more realistic. I think that you may drop one of the Clippers games. That Miami Heat team is playing some really great basketball. Denver, I'm not so much worried about. And that's partially because Nikola Jokic hasn't been phenomenal this year. But at the same time, even though he hasn't been phenomenal, they're still a good team. But the Rockets just torch Denver every time they play. And it's because you can't put Jokic out there against the likes of James Harden and Clint Capella. And now you add Russell Westbrook to the mix. Granted, Westbrook and Capella haven't been running a whole lot of pick and roll between the two of themselves. But you add Russell Westbrook, you add the increased pace, and Jokic is going to be passed out by halftime. I feel like he's not going to be able to keep up physically with the likes of the Rockets. And that's shown in previous years, and now with the pace through the roof, with Russell Westbrook really running and gunning with that second unit, I don't see Denver as much of an issue, honestly. And you're not going to pull your best player just because he can't run up and down the court and keep up with the high-octane Rockets. It's not how that works. You're going to try and slow things down, and the Rockets are going to try and speed things up, and it'll be a battle of who can make things slower and who can speed things up. And I think that's a battle that the Rockets are going to win fairly easily. The Dallas game worries me. The Rockets lost to the Dallas Mavericks twice last year, and Luka Doncic? I can't say his last name. I'll look up the phonetics the next time before I try and say it, but forgive me and my 5 a.m. podcasting sins. Anyways, Luka is an absolute Rockets killer, and I hate it so much, and I'm sure you guys do too. The Mavericks lucked into yet another generational talent who is going to be a Rocket killer for years to come. And now they've got Kristaps Porzingis paired with him. And they're looking good. Kristaps definitely looks like a guy who hasn't played basketball for, what was it, a year and a half? Kind of rehabbing everything going on with him. But that dynamic duo, thank goodness they'll be hitting their primes as the Rockets are hopefully sitting on a championship or two and getting ready to retire the jerseys of Russell Westbrook and James Harden in the rafters of Toyota Center. Thankfully, they will be hitting their primes as all of that has already been accomplished, because that is not a dynamic duo that I would want to have to face down the line. The Pelicans are going to have to deal with it. Zion's going to have to deal with it. But the Rockets, they'll be in rebuilding mode by the time that, not Zion, I apologize, by the time that Luka and KP are hitting their stride and maybe Dallas picks up a third star to pair with those guys and they dominate the league for years to come, Rockets will be rebuilding, and I'll be happy about that, because that is going to be a scary team down the line. So I'm a little worried about that Mavericks game. I feel like that's a trap game right there. That could very easily be one of those two or three losses. But let's say they come out 5-3. That puts you at 12-6 on the season. That's a respectable record to start the year with, especially if you can make it through that gauntlet and come out 5-3 on the other end and then pick up a win against the Atlanta Hawks at the tail end of it, kind of just put the cherry on top. So we'll call it that 9-game stretch. If they can go 6-3, that'll put them at 13-6 on the year. And that's a pretty nice record rolling into December. It really is. So this Houston Rockets team, for all the struggles that they faced early on offensively, for the issues that they had, the biggest question was whether or not Russell Westbrook and James Harden could coexist. And I think they've proven through these first 10 games that that isn't going to be an issue. They can coexist. Westbrook has deferred to Harden. Harden has deferred to Westbrook. We've seen games where Westbrook has taken over down the stretch. We've seen games where Harden has taken over down the stretch. We've seen games where they both struggled. We've seen games where one struggled and one was great. We've seen the opposite happen, where the other struggles and the other is great. We've got a pretty nice sample of games under our belt this short 10 games into the season. And so I think that that being the biggest question and having already have that answered 10 games into the season is great. Now we just have to look at things like the defense. Can they shore up their defense and get it into the 10 to 15 range and be a, again, they're not going to lock anybody down, but they're damn sure going to outscore their opponent. So can you just get the defense shored up enough to where your offense, your high-octane, explosive offense, can carry you through some games and carry you through the stretches where you have some defensive lapses? Because we know this team. We know these guys. They're going to have defensive lapses throughout the season. It's just a question of if they can build up that offensive firepower enough and build up their leads high enough to where that when they do collapse, that it's not a monumental collapse. And got to give Mike D'Antoni some credit. These past few games, again, they haven't been against contenders, but he's been, his rotations and his timeout usage has been optimal. And that's definitely a gripe that we've had, where if the lead starts slipping, Mike D'Antoni's like, oh, they'll play out of it. No. He's been actually calling timeouts in critical situations where it looks like the game could be getting away from the guys. And I think that maybe he's realizing that with Chris Paul on the court, yeah, you can do that. Yeah, you can try and let the team get out of their funk, because having Chris Paul on the court is like having another coach on the floor with your guys. That high IQ from Chris Paul, D'Antoni just kind of trusted to let him figure things out. But I think he's realizing that with the combination of Russell Westbrook and James Harden, it's a lot better to burn a timeout, kind of rally his troops, let them catch their breath. You got a guy like guys like Westbrook and PJ Tucker with motors that run nonstop the moment they hit the hardwood. So giving them a timeout, letting them catch their breath, regroup physically, mentally, before they go into a stretch where they've got to reclaim a lead or prevent a lead from slipping away any further, I think that's great. I think it's a great thing to see, and hopefully we'll see more of it down the line. Now, before I go ahead and wrap things up completely, I will go ahead and say that I've got Justin Levine joining me on the show tomorrow. He and I are going to be talking not just the Rockets and their on-court activities, but he's got a series going on over at Red 94 where he is a blogger that encompasses Tillman Fertitta and kind of the business side of things for the Houston Rockets. So we'll be talking about that. And then Ben Dubose will be joining the show a little bit later this week, probably Thursday or Friday. So that's just a quick preview of those guys coming up this week. You can follow those guys on Twitter. Justin's on there at Justin Lev, L-E-V. And then Ben, of course, is on there at Ben Dubose. So go ahead and go give those two guys a follow if you're not doing so already. But for this Tuesday morning, November 12th, this is where we break things. As always, thank you for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin, and the show is, of course, on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which is found at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, the website lockedonrockets.com, and of course our email address lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to contact me and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to please subscribe and rate this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts, if you could take a moment to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they're published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and seeing this business model roll along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Tuesday, November 12th, this is where we break things. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.